Good morning. You're listening to Central Wisconsin's 24-hour information station, WFHR. It's time now for the Morning Magazine.
Welcome, everyone, to Morning Magazine for this March 21st, 2023, 10:05 on the clock, and you have your host, James J. Mailoff, here. At 10:30, we're going to speak with CEO of your United Way of South Wind and Adams Counties, Terry Johns. We'll have Terry in studio. Right now, in studio with us, some of our favorite people. We've got our friends from Historic Point Boss here. Good morning, you guys.
Good morning.
Good morning, James, and everybody in WFHR land.
Thank you so much for being here. Appreciate the time, and any chance we can talk about Historic Point Boss. Always like being able to do that, and today we're going to put our focus on the Wakely Sugar Bush. This is coming up Saturday, March 25th, this Saturday, from 10 to 4. It's going to be a really fun event, as it is every year. And you guys know by now, I love talking maple syrup. Like, any chance to talk maple syrup, I'll take it. Let's dive into this event, Mike, and let's first touch on it as if people haven't heard of it before. Let's explain to them what it is.
Well, a lot of people probably aren't familiar or just faintly familiar with the harvesting of maple sap, which is cooked down into maple syrup. And we do it, if we have enough people, we'll do it the traditional way, and Tom can cover that. Tom, why don't you cover? Mm-hmm. Basically, the cranberry industry and the maple syrup industry came from our Native American forefathers here, and they're the ones that started both those industries. Of course, us white people took it to the nth degree, of course, but why don't you tell Tom a little bit how the Native Americans discovered it and maybe how they did it in those days?
Well, there's the maple trees, if you break a branch or there's a damage to the tree, will leak maple sap this time of year. Huh. And as a kid, I remember several large trees that were kind of hurting, and they would just, they would literally run down the side of the tree. So the Native Americans collected this stuff and used it, I think, in cooking to start with. Mm. And in doing that, realized that it gets a lot sweeter the longer you cook it. Mm. Now, there's a bunch of different theories about it because they didn't write stuff down. Mm. Theirs is an oral tradition, mm-hmm. and there's some gaps. Mm. But pretty much one of the ways that they would have done it and it was to use hot rocks to boil the sap to reduce it. Huh. We do an experiment with our cooking class where we take a trough of wood, a wooden trough, 12 inches deep, 12 inches wide, 4 feet long, put in three or four baseball to softball size rocks in there and raise it from ambient around 72 or whatever degrees to well over 100 in 4 minutes. Hmm. And the more you do it, the more you can boil water in a wooden container using hot rocks. Hmm. Now, you can't do that all the way down to the bottom to get syrup. It'll stick to there. You can't do it. It doesn't work. But then they took and would put it in a trough and set it on a hot rock and actually heat the wood enough that it would still keep evaporating, mm-hmm. to get it down closer to syrup. And at night, they wouldn't boil it all night. You would think, okay, keep it going all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
You'd let it freeze, and the water and the thicker minerals and sugars separate, and they just skim that ice off the top each morning.
Whoa.
They're actually reducing it, yeah. as they sleep, probably almost quicker than if you did it with the rocks.
Right, right.
And then they put it in a trough on a rock and cook it down. And then the natives did it into maple sugar.
Hmm.
When you get it down to, well, I don't know, today they do it to like 240 degrees. I mean, they boil it down so it's thick,
yeah.
syrup.
Yeah.
And then you stir it, and you're making crystals, just like they make white crystal sugar.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. And then they stored it that way. They wrapped it in birch bark cones or other containers and would keep forever. Syrup will spoil, get moldy, start to work a little bit, ferment. So they took it down to sugar, because they would use it all year long.
Yeah. Huh. And it's kind of interesting, James, and we talked about it, I think, the last time we were here, maybe a couple of years ago, that the Native Americans in Michigan produced so much of this, thousands of pounds of this, and you can imagine the process, how
it took
so long to get thousands of pounds. And during the and before the Civil War, with the abolitionists in New York and in the New England states, they provided them maple sugar because the people were kind of boycotting the South and the sugar that was coming out of the Southern states. And, of course, during the Civil War, it wasn't available because there was a war. Yeah. They might have been getting some from the Caribbean islands or something like that, but there was a big industry of it. And I read somewhere, I think, that they got like 4 cents a pound, so you can imagine.
Yeah. Wow. Just
unbelievable.
But there were tons and tons.
Yeah.
And the native people picked up on metal cooking containers very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on, you know.
Yeah.
These folks are survivalists from way back, and this made their life just much better. And so you can imagine that big cooking kettles made their way out to the frontier reasonably soon, and they would actually bury them at their sugar bush site.
Hmm.
So that next year you come and you have to lug it with you all the time. It's the only time you use it, so you'd bury it or hide it, and then in the spring you would go back and get it.
Certainly during that time when the Native Americans, especially in the state of Michigan, or not probably the state yet, but territory of Michigan, did it at that time, they were using metal kettles.
Oh, sure.
They weren't using stones and wood troughs and things like that. They were ready. They probably had that stuff since late 1700s that trading and that sort of thing.
I would say late 1600s.
Yeah, and we got a treat for you today, James, in dealing with Katrine and Stephen. We want to keep up the tradition.
Yeah. Oh, you got something for me to try?
Well, we always talk about maple sap, and then it's a 40-to-1 ratio to cook it down. You know that's average. Sometimes a little better, sometimes a little late. So I just harvested this yesterday from down at the Wakely site, and this is maple sap, and you'll be able to taste it.
Yeah.
And there isn't a lot of sweetness to it. It's just a hint of sweetness, but that's what you start with to get maple syrup out of it.
Oh, wow!
And you can imagine how much it's going to take of boiling this down to get a product that's really sweet.
Huh.
You can just taste it like there is maybe just a hint of sugar in there. And there is. I think most of these things have, I think, Tom, I saw if you had a good maple tree, it was maybe 5 or 6% sugar. The average is maybe 4%. So it isn't a lot in the sap.
No.
So that's why that's that 40-to-1 ratio. But it's just a hint of it.
You're right. I immediately could taste a hint of the sugar a little bit, but it doesn't taste like sugary water.
No,
it's almost inseparable, the sugar and water. Like, it's so intertwined.
In fact, some people now have got industrious with this or creative with it, and they're bottling this maple sap as an electrolyte. Because it would have some minerals in there, plus a little bit of sugar, and they're bottling it for an electrolyte for athletes or whoever would want electrolyte replacement. And so, you know, that there's going along different ways. And, of course, we talk about maple trees being used for that, but they tapped a lot of different things. But maple has by far the most sugar. Now, you can tap birch and things like that. They'll only have a hint of sweetness to it, and sometimes a little bitter overtone or something to it. But
there's some folks at Rudolph that have been bottling for themselves box elder, which is a maple cousin, if you will.
Yeah.
It's kind of more of a scrubby tree, but I know I've tasted that, and it's good. I mean, it's a lot like maple because it's, like I say, a first cousin.
This is really cool. Thank you, Mike. Yeah. I, that's fascinating to me. That's so cool. You guys know I'm a history nerd, and some of my favorite history is certainly American history, and that this era that we're talking about, kind of before things got incredibly tense and everything between, you know, those first colonizers and Native Americans, when they were kind of learning to work together. And those, you know, sharing things. Native Americans shared things with those colonizers and so on and back and forth and everything. It's such a cool, like, to me, it's really what we were supposed to be doing, what this country was supposed to turn into and everything, a collaboration instead of, you know, what it kind of the direction it went for a while there and everything. This brings you back to that a little bit. And I think that's really cool, along with, of course, bringing history to life, which is what you guys do at Historic Point, Boss. Seth and I have this bit called Wasting a Time Machine, that if we could go back in time, I'd want to see, they always talk about if you have a time machine going back and saving humanity and these things. And I'm a big believer in you change one thing and things could get worse. So I'm going to keep things as they are, but I would waste a time machine to go back and see Miles Davis at the Monterey Pop Festival or something like that. I'd love to go back in time and see that first person discovering that maple syrup, like you could use this for something, tasting like, guys, this is really good. We should do this something with this.
Yeah.
And to see that process of how they figure this out, the trial and error of, okay, this amount of degrees is too cold. We got to go hotter or what have you. Like, that just is such a cool thing to think of how that broke down.
You're maybe talking, James, about maybe hundreds, maybe thousands of years for this whole evolution of this industry to come to where it is today, certainly.
I just watched one on an evolution of corn in Mexico from a grass to what we have today. I mean, it's 10,000 years.
Yeah.
But it was the first genetic engineering, if you want to call it that. I mean, it isn't the kind where you...
Or maybe more typically, maybe hybridization.
That's maybe it. But I mean, they're specializing in, this little corn thing is like we would think of the little baby corns that you get in the Chinese Asian foods. This all took thousands of years, and it's just fascinating.
When it comes to that, and you mentioned this a little bit, Tom, that the Native American recipes, there were holes missing in this and everything. So when it comes to filling those holes, how did that work out? How did that go? Was that something that you guys were in the process of? Others were? I mean, it seems like something that would take a lot of people to kind of, a lot of different minds to jump in on that one.
I think it's still going on.
But, it's kind of like reverse engineering anything else. And much of the herbs and spices that we think of today as flavorings started out as medicinal stuff. And they learned that they liked it. And kind of a preventive medicine. Well, okay, if cinnamon is good for this, then why don't I put some in my Cinnabons or whatever you got and help prevent whatever it is. And besides, it tastes really good. So sage and sweet grass and... Well, not sweet grass so much. That's more of a scent thing. But
I get what you mean.
You know what I mean. The different. There's a ton of herbal stuff out there and vegetables that are growing. Hazelnuts was one of the biggest things. They grow wild all over North America, the northern part of North America. Yeah. And they harvested them, just tons and tons of them.
We are speaking with Mike and Tom from the Historic Point Boss, talking about their weekly Sugar Bush event coming up this Saturday from 10 to 4 over at the Historic Point Boss. And one of the things you guys are going to have a part of this is Canadian dumplings. They're going to be the part of this as well.
It's a brand new thing that one of our members came up with.
Yeah.
And before we used to do silver dollar pancakes with maple syrup, but this was kind of a different recipe. I think these dumplings are made and then they're cooked in maple syrup. I think it's a combination of water and maple syrup, like 50-50 or something like that. And that'll be in the house, and you can get a little taste of those and a sample of those. Like we always say, we're not providing a meal, so it's a taste testing is what it is, actually. So it's nice that you announced that what we were talking about. James, if somebody had tuned in, they wouldn't know what we're talking about here. We diverged a little bit.
I love that we do, though, too. I love that we do that sometimes. And I think that that's one of the things, really, what you got there was a bit of what you'll get at the Wakely Sugar Bush. You get these this chance of not just being told history, but learning history, being able to kind of be immersed in it a little bit. And I think people learn and register or remember things better that way as well.
And last year was the first year I decided to give people a taste of this. Of this maple syrup or maple sap, actually, and so we'll do that again this year. Then I'll also take some out when we got it, maybe one quarter, one third cooked down, and I'll give you a taste of that to show you what the difference is of that concentration as we get closer and closer to maple syrup. We never actually get to maple syrup there. It would take probably 10 or 12 hours, and we only got like a 9-hour or 8-hour day there, so we don't get some of our members take it home and they cook it down and finish it off. But we just don't have enough time in the day, or we'd have to start at 4 in the morning to get it ready. So
I'm not coming in.
Can you sleep in, Tom? Yeah, you don't have to worry about that.
When it comes to the event, we always like to make sure that people know that it's affordable. You guys go out of your way to make sure that it is, and we greatly appreciate that. Because for adults, it's $3. Students, it's $1. And that money goes into right into things over this Historic Point Boss to keep not only the lights on, but to keep history alive, to keep these events continuing.
Yeah, we're, you know, with some of that money and some of the things we've done in the past, we're working on a shelter that will be up and running, I hope, by end of May or some, certainly for our festival in June. Speaking of the festival, it's a good segue for me to give everybody a teaser, James. It's the 160th anniversary of the Gettysburg Address, and we got a Lincoln interpreter that'll be there and be reciting that, and we'll have some Civil War soldiers there. And I'm working with a group that's playing some music to play Hail to the Chief, because it was used the first time in 1837 for Andrew Jackson. So, it's going to be a little different movement to it. And actually, it's kind of hard to get soldiers, the interpretive soldiers, to be there, because in 2 weeks after that is the actual date at Gettysburg, and everybody's heading to Gettysburg. Of course, all these reenactors go out there. They have a great group of people out there.
Yeah.
And so it'll be kind of fun for people if they – and he'll review troops, whatever amount of troops we have there, and he'll do some other speaking and things like that. So he's from St. Clair, Minnesota, and so we're kind of happy to have Bryce Stenzel join us, and we wanted to make this kind of special because of the 160th anniversary. So
great idea. That is a great idea. That is going to be a lot of fun. That is going to be very cool. Something like that, too, for young people, I think it stays in their memory a little bit more. Those kind of something like that.
You know, it was always that, you know, what we heard about when we read it in school, and maybe some of us try to memorize it or something. Some of those teachers, you know, kind of said, well, you should memorize this. It isn't very long and that sort of thing. But we heard about the great big speech that was given, you know, it was like 2 hours long before that. His was so short, a lot of the people didn't know he was done or he had even done it yet. And this is the one that sticks with us, not the 2 hour speech.
It gets lost in the shuffle a little bit, but Lincoln was not only one of our greater presidents, but he was a great public speaker. Like, he was very smart with his words, and his speeches, and that one in particular, go down as some of the greatest of all time. And that one especially, top 10 greatest speeches of all time. Not just from the presentation and the meaning of it, but the way it was written. Lincoln had like people that worked with him, but he was his nowadays.
He was his own speechwriter.
Yeah, he was his own. Like back, nowadays they've got people that a team of writers and stuff back then. It's just Abe. That's pretty cool.
And I think that the whole gist of it is because of the very scarcity of words and the brevity of the whole thing, and he just told it all in very few words.
Well said.
He didn't have to talk 2 hours.
Because
the guy that was talking 2 hours is putting more people to death they're going to bury in that cemetery.
Nicely done, sir. I did want to mention, whenever you guys join us, I like to bring up a couple of things. One of them that the Historic Point Boss has tours that we offer to students and different groups, something we always want to remind people of.
Yeah, we got about 8 set for spring so far.
Cool.
And they start usually in the first part of May or the last part of April, and we encourage all those out there listening that is a mother of a student or maybe a retired teacher that knows somebody in the school district. And we do about a 50-mile radius, actually, do from Wausau. We got school from there, and Stevens Point, of course, and Bancroft and Millador, and all around us, Adams Friendship. But we also have that newer thing we talked about, I think, last time, James, is that if you're in the area and you want to get a tour, and it's not one of the days we have an event there, you can call ahead and arrange something for, a family, 4 people, or a reunion or something like that, and we can arrange a tour for you on any specified day that we have personnel available. So that's a great boon, I think, and for people that, we do about 8 or 9 events a year, and so if it's kind of hit and miss if people come into the area from out of town, and if you got some people out there that maybe you got some friends or relatives coming in and you want to have something special, call us ahead of time and arrange that, and we'd be happy to take you around.
Talked to some listeners, and last time you guys joined us about that, and they really loved hearing that that was an option. That there was a new family in town, and they were very curious. They're not from Wisconsin, so they were really curious about the history, and they weren't able to make the last event you guys were here with us for, the ice event, I believe. So this one they're probably going to be at, and that's pretty cool. But telling them that, hey, there are, you know, there's plenty of other opportunities to check out things at the Historic Point Boss, and also plenty of opportunities to volunteer over there. We want to keep things going, and as much as we love Mike and Tom, we cannot keep them working the next 30 years, people. We need volunteers.
25 maybe, but not 30.
There you go, Tom. That's my guy. We want to keep you guys working, of course. We want to keep things alive over there. Volunteers, people, you know, young blood into the organization over there is helpful to do that.
Yes. You know, what, there are young families out there, and they go, well, geez, I got these kids. No. Pioneers came to this area. Were not gray-haired old men and women. They were young people with lots of kids. We love kids. I mean, not just as visitors.
Yeah.
But on the site, I mean, that's what there was there. And if you're going to really portray the history, you got to have some little members, too.
Yeah.
That's a great point.
And the Wakelys came on June 2nd, 1837, and they had two boys, and the third child, a girl, would be born that December. So,
yeah, yeah.
So we like to portray a little bit more what was there, so we like the involvement of young families, certainly.
You talk about gutsy women.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She's 50 miles from the nearest settlement. And she comes in June and has a baby in December. Hold on, folks.
That's incredible. The stories, there's so many of them, too. And they're all there for you, waiting to be heard over at the Historic Point Boss. You want to be a part of the Wakely Sugar Bush, it is this Saturday from 10 to 4. Learn about the historic making of maple syrup from experienced cookers. Maybe get some tips. You never know. People like a city boy like myself that hopes to be able to do this one day, I need to be going to
every
one of
these.
There's
a lot of people that do it on just in their backyard.
Yeah,
tons of
them. So cool. Yeah. Again, this event is happening this Saturday. We encourage you to take in the event from 10 to 4. Preschoolers and members get in for free. Otherwise, adults, $3. Students, $1. And you can find out more by going to historicpointboss.com. That's historicpointboss.com. Mike, Tom, you know how much I love talking to you guys. Thanks so much for the time. Appreciate it. Looking forward to hanging out again real soon.
Yeah, thanks, James and WFHR.
We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little more with our friends from the United Way coming up here on Morning Magazine at WFHR. Our locally grown radio.